Welcome to Season 10 of Talking with Traders as we begin 2025. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020, and we've just surpassed 200,000 downloads of Talking with Traders. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we welcome back to the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in various areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or, if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get into this week's interview. My guest for this week's Talking with Traders podcast episode is Julian Komar from Hamburg in Germany. Julian, I've wanted to speak to you for a very long time. I know I've emailed you a number of times to request an interview, and finally you agreed. So I'm very excited to speak to you. Welcome to the podcast, and thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
It's good to talk to you. As I always do with new guests, Julian, I just want to get a bit of background to yourself. I follow your work on YouTube. I follow the emails that you send out every Sunday, which you clearly put a lot of work into every weekend. I get that you're a very meticulous, very thorough person, and the work you put out there is fantastic. But I just want to get a bit of background into yourself. Before you were a trader, where did you go? What's your career been like up until this point?
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. Let me talk a little bit about myself. So I'm 39, as you already said. I'm living in Germany, very much in the north of Germany, in Hamburg. And of course, I not started out as a trader. I became very early in my career a media designer when I was 16, and I worked for many years in the e-commerce industries in product management. And I think that also helped me a lot to become a trader. So media designer on one side are, as the term media designer already says, has to do something with design. But, this is also something which has a lot to do with, recognizing things in images and in designs. And that is something where I think, okay, that also helps me a lot today in my trading work. So something like pattern recognition, something like that, feels very, very natural for me. And later in my career, when I switched more into e-commerce technology and also digital product management, that was something where I learned a lot about technology companies and software companies to stay up to date, etc. And that also helps me a lot in my stock trading today when I do research about companies and when I try to identify high potential stocks that I'm trading, but also my members are trading. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So how long ago did you actually start trading full time after the e-commerce business?
I never really have been a full-time trader, okay. To be honest. So last December 2024 was the first situation where I left the company, which I worked for, and switched into full-time trading, but also being full-time available for my community and also my educational work. And there was always one reason for that. And I'm totally honest with you, I'm not 100% sure if I ever want to be a full-time trader. Mm. So, and the first reason is really, I like to work with people, and I need people connection. And to be a trader sitting alone in front of your screens the whole day is a very lonely thing. And this is something I personally don't enjoy. That's also one of the reasons why I have been in a leadership position for many years, because I need this, contact to people and also seeing other people grow. And that's also one of the reasons why I many years ago started to offer education to other people. So, and 2025 for me is the first year where I would say, okay, I'm a full-time trader, but also having an educational business where I do, you know, mentoring, one-on-one mentoring, which also gives me this type of people connect.
Yeah.
I started out my trading career very early. So I would say I'm roughly 20 years in trading. But of course, not always with the same style and not with the same knowledge. I mean, every trader learns over the years. But I came in contact when I was 16, the first time with trading, when I bought the first mutual funds for myself. And that was a big aha moment, because I can remember the situation very early, or very, very good, because I was speaking to the consultant at that time, and I said, okay, but you will call me, right, if the things go down. Yeah. And I never received a phone call from them. And there was a time when I understood, okay, you have to take care about yourself. And then I also got in contact with other trading vehicles, and also came very early to stocks in my career. And yeah, and as Jesse Livermore said, you know, the game taught me the game. And I learned a lot also from other traders. That is one of my, one of the most valuable sources for my own trading career. And that's also one of the reasons why I decided to give people back and educate people. As you said, you know, creating a newsletter, that was one of the first things I was doing. Because I know how important it is to learn from experienced traders in your career, and really make progress through that.
Fantastic. And it's interesting what you say about not trading full time. I mean, I feel the same way, and I'm kind of the same as that. I don't trade full time for a living. I enjoy trading and I do it, but I run a variety of other things on the side. And part of it is, as you say, you don't want to be, you know, lonely. It can be a lonely pursuit, but it's also, I think, having some sort of other risk-free revenue income stream is very helpful, because as you and I both know, markets don't give you consistent returns. The returns come in lumps, and sometimes you can have a bad month and you go home poorer than you started. And some months you can come home with a really nice big fat wallet of winners. But if I think for people that take trading on full time purely just to try and eat what they kill, it's difficult, right?
Yeah, and I think you also have to understand one thing when it comes to full-time trading. So either you can grow your account and make a lot of money, or on the other side you take out all the profits from your account, but then you will not have enough capital. And I think this is something the most traders who wants to become full-time traders also underestimate. You know, when you have capital in your account, and I don't know, you have one bad year or something like that, and you always have to draw in money out of your account, your capital goes down, and it is much, much harder to work against that, and also to create the profits that you need to make a living. So, and this is something where you have to make a decision if you want to grow your capital until a certain amount, and then it becomes easier also to become a full-time trader from that.
Yeah. Yeah,
you totally. I think the dreams that so many people have to, I don't know, trade an account with 10K or 20K and make a full-time living out of that, that can work, but it's probably a very, very hard thing to do.
Yeah, very unlikely to work. Yeah, and I completely echo that. So, Julian, from following your weekend emails that you send out, and as I said, they're always very thorough and I really enjoy reading them. You know, your charts are always very clean. I can see you're a technical analyst, very proficient with technicals, but also you talk fundamentals as well. Your approach seems to be very consistent. I know that you're a very big fan of the CAN/SLIM approach to identifying trading opportunities, and I'd like to just talk to you a little bit more about that. And in general, can you just talk to me about the process that you follow to identify stocks that go onto your watch list? Because I know every weekend when you send out the email, there's three stocks that you highlight, but usually that's three of, 30 or 40 potential stocks that you've got on the watch list for that week. It's just a teaser. So what do you look for? What are the criteria that you look for to get stocks onto your watch list for each week?
Yeah, I usually trade three types of different stocks. So as you already said, so I'm going in the direction of Cancelum, even if I made the Cancelum approach my own approach.
That Cancelum, sorry to interrupt it, that Cancelum was perfected by, was it Peter Lynch?
No, William O'Neill
Oh, sorry, William O'Neill. Yes,
from
okay. Of
Investor Business
course.
Daily, right?
Right,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I mean, it's a growth stock approach, and William O'Neill studied so many past big winners and tried to find out, okay, what they have in common. And this is a timeless approach, which is not only approached or which is not only applied by William O'Neill at the time, but if you go back a little bit more in history, you find a lot of commonalities also with other traders, like Jesse Livermore and all the names. So, and I think, building your own approach on something like Cancelum, where you have a time-proven system, which identified so many big winners in the past, is a great starting point for your own career. So, and when it comes to my own approach, to answer your question, I'm looking for three types of stocks. The first one are these typical Cancelum stocks, Cancelum stocks with big EPS growth, big growth in earnings per share, in sales, with good return on equity, with a good EPS outlook, strong accumulation. So very typical Cancelum stocks that have also a big potential to make good moves. So this is the first category of stocks I'm looking for. The second one are what I call sales growers. These are usually younger companies that do not have EPS at all or profits at all, because they are reinvesting all their money into growing their sales and also growing their business, which is totally fine for IPOs. But I want to see a strong sales growth, something like 30, 40% or much more year over year on a quarterly base. And the third type of stock I'm trading are story or momentum stocks. These are stocks which are usually driven by a great vision or a great outlook of profitability, but also of sales. They sometimes have sales, they sometimes also have EPS, but they are usually driven by a story that is behind a stock. And that is also something which I enjoy very much. And this is also something where I would say I spent almost 95% of my time doing research, and not only looking at fundamentals or technicals, but also looking behind the stock. What is the company doing? What are the products that the company provides? And that gives me a very, very good impression about what is the potential of the stock to make big moves or not. Because as William O'Neill said in the Cancelum system, the N in the Cancelum system, something new is very important, a new product, a new service. And when we look out into what is going on in the stock market right now, in the last couple of months, data center, AI stocks, etc., they all went through the roof, and they all fit into this category of new, and they all more fit into this category of sales growers and probably momentum stocks. And this is really what I'm looking for.
Okay, so from that I can pretty much gather it's mostly probably a lot of tech stocks, a lot of biotech type shares, anything that's, as you say, new. Do you then not really look at anything that's sort of old and mature, like let's say telecoms businesses or
No.
old-fashioned banking, high street banks, nothing like that? Okay.
No, because it's very simple. So what I'm looking for is I'm looking for stocks that have the potential to move 50 to 100% in a couple of weeks to a couple of months. So
Right.
really these home runners. And I'm not an investor, I'm rather a trader, and I know that I can probably make two or three times in a year a good money. And I have to find these stocks that are able to produce this return. And these are usually not the older companies or the slow growing companies. There's nothing wrong with that. I also have members in my own community trading totally different stocks than me, which is absolutely fine. And especially when you want to hold longer, when you want to hold longer stocks than me, then you probably need also a different type of stock and more into Cancelum or typical Cancelum stocks with lower growth and also lower sales. And these are the stocks you can also hold for a longer time. But I'm looking more for stocks that can deliver a high return in a couple of weeks to months.
Right. Okay. And I was intrigued with something you mentioned there. You said you can make good money out of, two or three or four trades in a year. Is that typically your experience that you find, your returns are often concentrated in two or three exceptionally big winners in a year, and then with a whole bunch of sort of average, maybe break even small gains and losses interspersed between?
Yes, it's not three or four stocks. It's rather, three or two or three times in a year, right?
Right.
So when the market is very healthy and very strong, then you find a couple of leading stocks that really deliver a good return, and that's what I'm really looking for.
Okay. Okay. All right. Super. And then tell me, when it comes to risk and position sizing, how do you work that? Because I get your approach to identifying stocks that you put into a watch list. And then I guess that once you've got these stocks that meet these various criteria that you've spoken about, then I would imagine your next step is to sort of take it through a technical analysis filter each week, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you've got 40 stocks, whatever, on your list, they're not all necessarily going to be setting up at the same time. Are your entry and exit criteria mostly technical analysis driven?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say 90% of my work at the weekend. So I'm going through my stock screeners. They include fundamentals and technicals, but I also have other stock screener looking only for technicals. I think it's very important to look at the market from different angles and see, okay, what is currently in favor of the market. And I drill that really down. So at the weekend, I would say I go through probably 300 stocks or something like that in my
Wow.
screeners
Okay.
and add a maximum of 50 to my watch list. And I really work also with limits, having not more than 50 stocks on my list. And then I go down into my watch list and see, okay, what could trigger a potential entry in the next week? And that is something which comes on the focus list. I share also all the lists, of course, with my members and prepare them for them. But I think it's super important also to really set a clear focus. You can't look at 150 stocks in a given week and track them all. It's more, you look at 5 or 10 stocks during the week and you really focus on them. And if they give you a technical entry signal, and this is important for me, I'm a breakout trader. I usually trade, I would say, 95% of my trades on breakout. And when they are really, really giving you a technical buy signal, a strong price move on good volume, then okay, it's time to get into this stock that is probably on a focus list.
Okay. So then to the point about risk and position size then, let's talk about that. Do you trade with leverage in your account? Okay, so you're not are you I mean when you're trading these stocks, are you trading them as physical stocks, or are you trading them as, for example, CFDs or stock futures?
Physical stocks.
Physical stocks.
So I'm trading on leverage if it makes sense, right?
Okay.
So this is something where I always say that has to come natural to me. It's not that I go into the market and I'm 150% invested or something like that. It's rather I start small. I always start small. Even a single trade or a single position is a small position at the beginning, and then I add to it on the way up. And this is also how I come naturally on margin. So when I add to my trades or when I have more positions open, but that is only the case if the market is in the right shape and if I can really take this higher risk.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. I was going to ask you about adding to winning trades, because that's obviously how you can achieve those really big home run type situations that we get a couple of times a year. But just to go back to the original, if we think about starting out a trade, you start with a small position, and I get that. What would your typical risk allowance be on that start out position in terms of a percentage of the capital that you're trading with?
Maximum of 1%. So
Right.
my normal position size that I try to achieve at the beginning of a trade is something 10 to 15%, depending on the market situation. So and then
10% to 15% of your notional capital.
Yes,
That,
of my
okay.
overall trading capital.
And that's the exposure. That's not the risk, just to clarify. That's the exposure, right?
So, and I'm usually setting a 7% stop loss, mostly even less. So that means I'm ending up with a risk of something 0.7 to 1 point X percent of my capital. So
Okay.
not so much. And to be honest, I very often do not realize this full risk when I get stopped out of a position. So when I exit a trade for a loss. So it's very often that I trade that I close my losers much earlier. And that's, that's how I can achieve a very little average loss in my trades. And as you said, when you add to your winners, you are able to increase your average win a lot.
Absolutely. And in terms of adding to winners, I mean, that's something I've always found relatively difficult to do with short-term trades. I find it much easier to do with trades that I'm holding over the medium term. And when I talk medium term, I'm saying maybe a couple of weeks to a couple of months at a time. Is that your experience as well when it comes to adding?
It all has to do with experience, right? So never underestimate experience in trading. So I follow one or I follow one concept which I find so helpful from William O'Neill. And he said, if a stock is up 20% in less than 3 weeks, hold it for 8 weeks. I'm not holding these stocks for 8 weeks, but the key is really to identify as soon as possible if a stock is more a 25% mover, a slower mover, or if it's a big mover. And especially for these big movers, you want to be more aggressive. And my experience with that is these bigger movers, you can identify them because they are behaving right and picture perfect as you have your blueprint in your mind. And these stocks almost give you no reason to doubt that. So, and these are the stocks which I try to make big. And when you have a stock breaking out of a perfect base and it's really taking off, not coming back, not pulling back, building tight consolidations on the way up, that is the time when I become aggressive. And when they reach new highs, so after, say, a 5 days consolidation or something like that, when they reach a new high and also show good volume on this new high, then I add to my winners. So, and I do that probably three or four times in a move and try to make it a big position. Of course, it also depends a little bit on the stock. When you have a very risky stock or very fast moving stock, you want to trade a smaller position size, but I can easily go up to 25 or 35% of my capital on one stock.
Very, very good. And stats in terms of your average win to loss ratio, if we look at it, I mean, obviously you say you've been trading for 20 years. I won't ask you for stats of 20 years because obviously it changes and you've matured a lot over the years, no doubt. But I mean, if we go back on, I don't know, the last year or the last 3 years, maybe, do you have stats on what your what percentage of your trades are winners versus losers?
Yeah, I would say I lose probably on 60% of my stocks. So I have a hit rate around 40%. And when we speak about that, I mean 40%, that sounds terrible for a lot of people. I personally don't re or really don't care about that because I'm really focusing on a few big winners. And one thing what people always underestimate is, of course, you have times in a year where you have a hit rate of 80 or 90%, when the market is in a good shape and you buy the right stocks at the right time, then eight or nine out of 10 trades will show you profit. So, and then you have other times where you just, where you have 90% losers over a couple of weeks, and that creates this 40% hit rate over time. And that is something you have to deal with, of course, right? So, but my goal is not to win very often. It's rather I keep an eye on my winners.
It's that's consistent with many of the really successful traders that I've interviewed. Exactly that. Most of them have a win rate that's well under 50%, but when they win big. Do you have stats on the what the average size of a loser is and what the average size of winners are?
I'm measuring everything in R, so
Yeah.
risk multiples.
Right.
So my average loss is around 0.5 R, so 0.5 to 0.6 R.
Okay.
And my winners are much bigger, so usually 5 to 7 times bigger
Yeah.
as my average loss.
Okay, that's interesting that your losses are 0.5R. So that talks back to what you were saying, that you often actually will cut a loser before your defined stop loss.
I can exit if a trade is not behaving right, and I can exit this either on the same day where I enter it, or maybe on the next day. So I really try to get rid of losers as soon as possible. And it's also my experience that if a stock is not behaving right, so if it's breaking out, going sideways, falling back into the range, or whatever, that is often the signal that you have to exit it much earlier because the stock is weaker than expected and
Yeah.
they will not deliver the return what you are looking for.
Yeah, it's sort of a self-fulfilling thing, isn't it? If the rest of the market is seeing the same setup that you're seeing, they're naturally all going to rush in and buy, and that's going to become self-fulfilling. The price is going to move in the right direction. And if it doesn't do that, well, then I guess it's a warning to you that the rest of the market's not seeing it the same way. So take that as information, right?
I personally I don't care so much about what other people are doing. The thing is that you need buyers behind you, right? When you go into the market, you need a lot of people buying, and it's not you and me who are the people who are driving the market, right? And the other market participants, like the big funds or whatever, they are also laying a lot of traps in the market if they want to get rid of shares and want to get rid of stocks. And when I see, when I see that a high potential company that I identified and where I also see accumulation activity in the volume footprints, et cetera, when that is not behaving right, it's probably a sign that the big guys are not buying. So stop buying, or even not buying new positions at all. And that
Yeah.
is something which worries me, and patterns is one thing, and self-fulfilling prophecy. But my experience is often the opposite, that the better a stock looks like, or the better a chart pattern looks like, the better it works also,
Yeah.
especially when it's a little bit under the radar. So of course, if everybody tries to buy I don't know, Nvidia or whatever, then there are maybe a little bit too many eyes. But if you have a stock with a perfect chart pattern and not or it's flying under the radar a little bit, these work very good. And
Yeah.
maybe one additional sentence to that. I think most people really, really underestimate where chart patterns are coming from. They always think that, chart patterns are, I don't know, created or whatever. This is totally nonsense, right? So there are so many institutions out there not looking at charts at all. Never underestimate that. So in the buying and selling activity from the big guys in the market, like Fidelity, BlackRock, whoever, hedge funds, banks, insurance companies, they are creating the chart patterns by their buying and selling activity. And this is something where I always have the feeling when I speak to other traders, they think that these chart patterns are something magic or whatever, but it is a fact, or it is developed by the market activity, and this is why you can read out of them what's really going on in a stock or not.
Yeah, it's a graphical representation of supply and demand is the way I always look at it, and it's very often repeatable.
Absolutely, yeah.
Are you big on journaling?
I'm not the best journaling
Okay.
people or guy. So, I mean, I use that much, much, much more often and much more intense at the beginning of my career. And I also recommend that to everybody. So in my beginning of my career, I was writing a diary every day. I was analyzing or summarizing this diary every week. I had a journal where I have all the trades collected with a lot of statistics, et cetera. I was doing screenshots, and that was super helpful at the beginning of the trading career. On one side, to also, tweak my trading approach and learn from the mistakes, but on the other side, also to get to know me better, Because trading is also a journey where you get to know yourself much, much more, and also in a different way. And this is something when you write a diary and when you write a little bit about your emotions, about your feelings that are coming up, this is something which is absolutely helpful if you start in a trading career.
Mm-hmm.
The more experienced you get, this is my experience, the more you do the same things over and over again. And of course, I'm reflecting a lot on my trading, you know, and I'm also reflecting a lot on my feelings and my mindset and the thoughts I have in my mind. But it's more an ongoing process, which I'm doing almost every time during the day than writing these things down today.
Yeah.
So, but at the beginning of my trading career, especially in the first years, I did so much on that. And that's also what I recommend today to my members or to the people I mentor, that I say, you know, you have to get to know yourself, and you also have to get to know your trading much better. So, you know, where are your mistakes? What could be improved, etc. And this is only possible if you write the things down.
Okay, fantastic. And daily routine, I mean, you've taken us through the fact that you do a lot of your research on the weekend. You said 90% of it gets done over the weekend, which I think is very commendable. What about the day-to-day stuff? Do you have a morning routine, a during the day routine, a post-market routine?
Yes. I have worked full time for many, many, many years. But it was always a similar routine. So preparation is the key. And my goal is always to do only little work during the week when it comes to trading. And so today I start out in the morning. I mean, the US markets are closed. I'm living in Germany. So the markets are closed, and I can easily prepare myself. So that means I'm going through my watch list. I'm going through the focus watch list. I have a look at the market. So what is happening? How are the indices behaving? I'm also tracking all the markets like US oil, like gold, silver, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Forex a little bit. And then I check everything. And for me, it's very important to know exactly where I want to buy a stock. So, and this is why I'm working a lot with alerts and place the alerts when I want to get notified when it's time to buy a stock or when it's time to sell a stock or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing all the other trading work mostly during the day with my smartphone, right? So the alert comes in. I'm opening either my chart software on my smartphone or my brokerage software, and I'm just executing the things because they are already prepared and I know exactly what to do and when I want to do something. And when it comes to screening work, I'm only looking at one screener every day, and that's it. So I really try to keep that very simple because that was something which I was familiar with when I was working full time.
Yeah,
I did not have so much time, and I'm doing the same thing today.
Yeah, sounds like a healthy distance between yourself and the screen, that you're keeping in touch with what's going on, but you're not watching every tick, which I know can become a bit counterproductive sometimes if you're too close to the market.
Yeah, true. And this is also an advantage a lot of people underestimate when you work full time besides trading, right? You always have something, you always have some distraction from the market, some distance from the market. I mean, if we look into the books from the Market Wizard series and look at Ed Sakota, who lived so many miles away from Chicago or from New York, from the big trading places, there is a reason. Jesse Livermore was doing the same thing. There is a reason, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm trying to be not at the screen the most of the time, you know, working in the garden or doing other stuff, being active in the community, mentoring people and so on, because that also helps me to have some distance between otherwise, you know, your monitor is like a slot machine, which is also a famous saying, and you are gambling too much. And gambling and trading are totally different things. And you have to be very focused, concentrated, and you have to also have some good distance to the market.
Great. And second last question, because we are getting towards the end of our time together. But I mean, like most traders, I'm sure you have ups and downs. Profitable periods make you happy. Dry, down drawdowns can make us a bit miserable. But I know we were talking before we even came onto this call. We were just talking about the semiconductor stocks because we're recording this on the 28th of January, by the way. And yesterday, Nvidia had its single. Well, its single biggest loss lost $600 billion of market cap in a single day, the most any company has ever lost in a single day. And you were talking to me about that, how it came around as quite a surprise, and it certainly came around as a surprise to everybody, I think. A lot of those semiconductor stocks looked pretty bullish. They had all the right, they were doing the right things. And next thing we come in and they're all down 15 or 20%. How do you deal with those emotional ups and downs to stay even keeled?
Yeah, I mean, experience and time will help, right? So the more experience you have, the more the market already gave you a hit in the face, the more you will learn to deal with these things, right? And I think two things are important. The first one is having the right expectation when it comes to the market, right? When you are under pressure and you have to make a living or you want to get rich quick or whatever. Then probably you will suffer a lot of emotional problems if you're not getting what you want. So expectation is absolutely important. That's why I'm so honest with everybody about that, right? So probably you have to work 10 years before you make good progress as a trader. So so that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I know it sounds a little bit strange, but I have a different connection when it comes to money, and that helps me a lot, right? Money in my own life means not so much to myself, and money is something where always emotions are attached to. And when I look at my own P&L, it's rather like a score or something like that. And this is also why an event like yesterday, for example, where almost all my stocks went against me brutally, hurts me so much. It's not so much about the money in that situation. It's more like I felt I lost a championship. I was so good prepared. I was in the right stocks. I was really trading them exactly right, I would say. And then, out of a sudden, you lost this championship, right? And this is something I have to deal with, and I'm doing that with just distraction, right? So I get distance to the market, so that means I'm not training for a couple of days, and I go on a walk, and I'm living more on the countryside, so I have also other things to do here, spending more time with the family, sharing also my feelings and also my thoughts with my wife, for example, and then slowly get back on track with that. And I think one of the biggest things a lot of people have to learn is, especially if you have a very, very good run in the market or run in your trading and you make a lot of money, that is the time when you have to be very cautious, right? Otherwise, the market hits you and will give you a very good lesson. So, probably that was one of the lessons I received yesterday. I don't know. I have to analyze that and also have to give myself some time to understand the message of the market. But I will learn something from that. I'm very
Yeah,
sure.
I really appreciate your honesty. So, last question, Julian, and it's really just to talk about your service, because you've talked about your members, about your community. Let's just unpack that a bit, what you offer and how listeners to this podcast can get in touch with you and how they can follow your work, because I highly recommend they do. Your stuff is excellent.
Yeah, as I already mentioned, so many years ago, I already started blogging. I started emails and newsletter every week, and there were always people approaching me and say, "Yeah, can you do a video course, or can you do a member community, or can you teach me, etc." And the people requested something from me, and I delivered. I was a product manager for many, many years. And that's how I developed the Growth Traders Toolbox course, which is a very, very deep source, or which contains a lot of content, everything, almost everything you need to become an experienced and also gain experience and knowledge in growth stock trading. So the Growth Traders Toolbox course is something I developed a couple of years ago, and I have really hundreds of people attended the course. And then I started the Market Update Premium community some years ago. It's a member service where I post a lot of ideas, where I have a live chat, where you get access also to the watch list and to all the screener settings, etc., where I have video reports twice a week. So on Wednesday, a short update, on the weekend, more intensify, and where you can get also really in contact with me. And a lot of members are benefiting from that, not only from the ideas, but also learning a lot by observing me, and also learning a lot from how I trade.
And you're on YouTube as well, I know, because last night while I was cooking dinner, I actually was listening to your latest YouTube, the one about what to expect in your first 10 years as a trader. And I thought that was a very good video. So you're on YouTube as well, and listeners can find you there.
I'm Twitter. Twitter is my main platform.
What is your handle on Twitter for the benefit of the listeners?
Blog Julian Komar.
At blog Julian Komar.
Yes. And you find me also on YouTube and, of course, on Google. So my website is julian-komar.com.
Right.
So you can also go directly there and subscribe to my newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my newest adventure, what I started recently, is Mentoring 101.
Right.
Also mentoring traders. I have a couple of them who requested that from me. So they asked me also, can you mentor me? And I said, okay, let's do it. And I'm very, very excited how that works during 2025.
That is exciting. Fantastic. I'll include links to all of these things in the show notes for this podcast. So listeners to the podcast can then go and find you either on Twitter or on your website or on YouTube. There's a variety of places they can go to.
Great.
Super. Well, Julian, thank you again for your honesty. I've actually really enjoyed this interview. And like I said at the beginning, I've been trying to track you down for a long time to get an interview. So I'm delighted that we finally got it right. And you've exceeded my expectations in terms of the conversation. It's been fantastic talking to you, and I really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Garth.
Good to meet you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app, or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.